Our wildfire season may be ending, but its effects will be long-lasting, especially in weed. The dangers of a fire speeding through a residential area will return. So it should come as no surprise to hear that people who fight fires in cities think in advance about measures to reduce the risk of that happening, or at least reduce the risk of a major spread of fire. The city of Ashland is moving ahead with a possible revision of its wildfire hazard zone. The zone could expand to include the entire city. The work began long before the weed fire. The work could wrap up soon with a public meeting set for tonight. We have two guests with us from Ashland Fire and Rescue. Marguerite Hickman is the Fire and Life Safety Division Chief. Marguerite, welcome back to The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey. It's good to be here.
Good to have you. Chris Chambers is the Forest Division Chief from Ashland Fire and Rescue. Good to have you back on The Exchange as well.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
So how did the process start? Did one or the other of you say, you know, this is something we should think about? It looks like Chris is getting pointed at.
Well, this is going back to the Siskiyou fire that we had in Ashland on the edge of town in 2009. It did lose one house in that fire and evacuated a whole host of homes and Bellevue Elementary School within the city limits. And then follow that up, the next summer, we have the Oak Knoll fire, which most folks remember, although, you know, we do have a lot of turnover of property owners and citizens in Ashland, so some people maybe weren't even here for the Oak Knoll fire, where within 45 minutes, 11 homes were mostly destroyed by a wildfire along I-5. So, you know, that was a good prompt that we needed to get on this issue. Although even when our current chief had started, that was before the Siskiyou fire, I'd been working on these kinds of issues, and the border of the wildfire hazard zone, as was created in the early 90s, I think mainly as a result of the Oakland Hills fire, which was in 91, a lot of people had moved here from California, and other visitors said, you know what, this looks a lot like the Oakland Hills. And of course, they had that catastrophic fire with thousands of homes burned, and I think 25 or 26 people actually died in that fire. So the wildfire hazard zone was created as a way of regulating a couple of things, basically wood shake roofing, which now everybody knows, you know, oh, if you have a wood shake roof, you're really susceptible to a wildfire. And then also what kind of plantings and fuel break you have around your house to keep fire from getting that close to structures and allowing firefighters a safe place to work and to be able to defend homes during a fire. And so, you know, all those things leading up to and then using those two fires as examples, we started researching on how do we move our very limited kind of shoestring of a wildfire hazard zone across the top of Ashland to include larger parts of the city. Because in the Siskiyou fire, the area we evacuated, 100 plus homes, was not actually in the wildfire hazard zone. And if I was a homeowner, I would have been thinking, you know what, I just got evacuated and I'm not in the quote-unquote wildfire hazard zone.
What's in fact, was some of the land that burned actually outside city limits? It seems like it started just outside.
The fire itself was wholly outside of the city limits, but really threatened that whole southeastern part of Ashland. And then the Oak Knoll fire, again, not in the wildfire hazard zone. And as Marguerite and I started to look at maps and plot out other fires that we've experienced in our dozen plus years here, a lot of them are not in the wildfire hazard zone. And so outside of that zone, we don't regulate that wood shake roof covering. We don't regulate the use of flammable species around a house in the landscaping and having to clear fuel breaks to allow firefighters space to work.
And what I would add to that, too, is that those fires that Chris alluded to that we were noticing outside the wildfire hazard zone, the fuels were the same types of fuels that we see in the wildfire hazard zone, and the fires burned like the fires we see in the wildfire hazard zone.
So it's not like the vegetation magically changes. I mean, pretty much the same stuff, just in different areas.
Yep.
And some lessons learned, particularly from the Oak Knoll fire, about fire travel. I mean, when you get certain kinds of weather conditions, I mean, this actually started on the opposite side of the freeway from the homes that burned, didn't it?
That's right. It started, near Washington Street and Ashland Street, and actually jumped the freeway from there to that, northern portion, northern grassy area, which is now where Caldera Brewery is, but in that area, and moved to the south. Towards the homes. And, you know, the winds, I would say that the stars were lined up that day. You know, the winds, we had extreme winds. One of our first on scene said he estimated it was probably a 25 mile an hour gust because we had flame links just laying down on its side like a blowtorch across the road. Wow. We had low humidities. We were down pretty darn close to single digit humidities. And that's very low and very susceptible to fire spread. And we'd been dry for several weeks, months, I don't remember what the time frame was, but you know, you put all that together and it's a recipe for disaster.
I can imagine that obviously this process, as we pointed out, did start quite a while ago, but that you saw what happened in Weed and the pictures just make your jaw drop. Thinking about, boy, if not for the grace of God, you know, this could happen in our town.
I have the chills every time we talk about that fire now. Yeah.
Yeah.
You said it. I don't know what we add to that.
Yeah.
So let's pick up at stuff like the vegetation, though, because this is something that might be a little surprising to a few people when you talk about flammable vegetation. We've talked probably half a dozen times over the course of this fire season on the Exchange about providing fuel breaks and defensible space around generally rural homes, but we don't tend to talk that much about the tree species and the plant species. And what kinds of things then are things that actually cause trouble in a fire spread situation?
Well, it's quite interesting. I've worked a lot in the forestry realm in our project in the watershed, and you can actually create a more flammable type of fuel around your home with domestic landscaping than exists out in the woods. So people, it's no fault of anybody in particular, but over the past 20, 30 years, we've had lots of good ideas for using things like junipers around houses because, well, they're water wise. They don't, you know, soak up a lot of water. They don't take a lot of maintenance. But juniper burns just like gas when it gets going, and it just takes one spark when that stuff is dried out. And there's plenty of other like examples, mostly conifer type species that have a really oily and waxy component to them in the needles. And you know, they can be a beautiful part of a landscape, but improperly used and overplanted, they can be a very flammable part of a landscape. And we did see that in the Oak Knoll fire. Rows of Leland cypress just torched out, and there was nothing left on them except just bare sticks. And I'm guessing that happened in a matter of a minute or so. We've really gotten into a situation that we've been proactive about doing education and trying to get people to fix those through our FireWise program. But at the same time, like they say, when you find yourself in a hole, the first thing you should do is stop digging. So we need to stop digging ourselves into this hole. And this is our first effort, and we're looking at this as a long, long-term project. This isn't going to happen overnight. It's going to be 10, 20, maybe even 30 years as this ordinance may come into place, and it only is going to affect new construction. So when somebody goes to do a new lot, you know, they got a bare lot, they put a new house on it, and or they're adding to an existing structure, then that's when this would kick into place. So it'll be a slow turnover over time to more non-flammable. Well, there's not really a vegetation that's non-flammable. We call them fire-resistant vegetation. And getting rid of the shake roofs, which I would say by and large is happening anyway. I think people just realize that wood shake roofs take a lot of maintenance and they don't last quite as long. But and of course, the danger factor, I think that's pretty well known at this point.
We were talking about the possibility of expanding the wildfire hazard zone in the city of Ashland with two of the chiefs from Ashland Fire and Rescue. Chris Chambers is the Forest Division Chief. Marguerite Hickman is the Fire and Life Safety Division Chief. If you have questions or comments about what's going on here or want to talk more generally about what happens when wildfires get into urban areas, join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. So at this point, if you drive up into the wildfire hazard zone, this is basically what we've referred to as the urban wildland interface, isn't it, Chris?
Or wildland urban interface, just so you can say WUI as the, okay. The acronym.
Got to get
makes
the
it a little
first,
more fun. Yeah.
But these are houses that truly, as in Oakland Hills, and I was up in Oakland Hills before and after that fire, and it was just amazing to see what it was like beforehand and then how different it was, like a bomb hit after the fire. But you're talking right about the woods, basically, right up to points right across the street from people's houses, sometimes right behind people's houses.
Well, I think what we've come up with in this, what we did was we did an analysis, and the state has a prescription, basically, that you follow to see if your area is a wildfire hazard zone. And so with some new technology that we acquired last year and using aerial photographs, we are able to do this analysis. And basically what the analysis said is that there's really no defined border between Ashland and the woods, you know, and or the watershed. That it grades into the city, and in fact, those conditions exist throughout the whole city limits. I mean, if you think on the lower part of the city and throughout the valley, this is the case along the Bear Creek Greenway. There have been a number of fires along the Bear Creek Greenway all the way from Central Point through Ashland. Some have been fairly serious fires, and that is no exception in Ashland. We have homes that border the Bear Creek Greenway where there's a lot of flammable vegetation right next to homes. And so it's not an issue really that the forest, as in up in the hills, is integrating into Ashland. It's just conditions that exist all throughout town. And there's pockets of wild vegetation, city parks, and other places that have that component to them, in addition to all of that domestic landscaping that we already talked about.
We have a call here on the line. Let's talk to Mark in Redding. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about Ashland expanding its wildfire hazard zone with Chris Chambers and Marguerite Hickman. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Just by coincidence, I was in the Oakland Hills for the first and only time a year before the fire, and I saw all these houses about 3 feet apart with the cedar shake roofs, eaves making them about a foot and a half apart, and I thought, well, cedar shakes don't work at all well in this climate, and if there's ever a fire, all these places will burn. But I tell people in California this story, and they go, what's the style? It's really sad. People, apparently, not everybody's figured that out yet, that cedar shake roofs are terrible. But you mentioned a lot of plants that are, you know, shrubs and whatever, trees that are bad. Could you name some that are good to have around so that people can use those?
Some of the more fire-resistant plants. Okay, good question. Thanks for that, Mark. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mentioned fire-resistant plants, and again, there's no plant that absolutely will never burn. Obviously, we, you know, cut up oak trees and other things to burn in fireplaces. But as far as a wildfire is concerned, the deciduous type of plants are much better than the evergreen type of plants. You know, I think that does leave something to be desired for landscape design when you don't have something that holds its leaves throughout the year, and maybe you want a wind block or something else. But there's I would say, kind of a narrow selection of evergreen-type plants. And then a lot of what goes into that is where you put certain species. So it's not to say that you could never, ever have a ponderosa pine or, you know, even a small juniper or something in your landscaping. It just has to be put into a place where it's not going to affect homes and or create a link across landscapes to other homes and cause a problem. So I think used in earnest, some of those more flammable plants could be okay, and or ones that stay close to the ground and don't grow tall. But you know, especially used as things like privacy barriers, those evergreen types like Leland cypress is the one that we deal with a lot in Ashland, and I'm sure around the region as well, because they're cheap and easy and they grow fast, and you know, maybe you don't want to see your neighbors, which a lot of people don't. I don't blame them for that. But you know, putting a flammable row of trees between your house and your neighbor's house when you're only 20 feet apart to start with is not such a good idea. And so we actually do have a plant list, a safe plant list, at our website, which is ashlandfirewise.org. And if you go to landscaping there, then you know, you can get to the plant list. And there's actually a specific list just for privacy barriers, in addition to a more general list of positive type plantings that are more fire resistant.
So the wildfire hazard zone is an overlay, isn't it? I mean, it ends up overlaying the existing residential or light industrial or whatever zone. Is that correct, Marguerite?
That's correct. Yeah, so what we would see is all of the existing zones in the city that have to do with land use would still be there, and then the wildfire hazard would just be an overlay.
And it sounds, so we've talked so far about things like roofs and therefore building material, building materials and plants, but any other particular changes that would have to happen? I mean, anything that people would have to do on homes that currently exist to comply?
And that's a great question, one of the concerns people want to hear. And Chris alluded to that, and I'm going to be even more specific, that first of all, if a home is existing and you don't do anything to it, there are no requirements that are retroactive or require you to do some change today. We would encourage you to, but it's not a part of this it would not be a part of this ordinance. On new construction, a new subdivision, so you're partitioning land, or if you make an addition to a structure, then you would be required to do fuels reduction. So up to the, you know, up to your property line. And in the case of a subdivision or partition, it would be all of the properties that are within that. So that fuels reduction is a thinning process. It's not saying that you have to replace all your landscaping. It's a matter of thinning it out to make it more fire safe so that fire doesn't have the opportunity to move through it in what we call the ladder fuels, so that flames touch the next species that's taller or too close. The second thing, which is not related to vegetation, is the roofing. So assume that you do nothing to your home except you have to replace your roof. If you currently have a wood shake roof and you're replacing more than 50% of it, you would have to change that to a Class B or better, which is basically a fire-resistant roof. It does not kick in doing anything to your vegetation at that point.
All right. When you talk about additions to structures, though, I mean, if you turn a half bath into a whole bath, does that trigger? Would it trigger? I mean, because, again, this hasn't happened yet. But
so in the current proposal, which is how the language currently reads in the existing wildfire hazard zone, and we're open to input from the public. That's why we're having these meetings and talking this morning here. In the current proposal and the current language, yes, if you add 50 square feet, 100 square feet, or 2,000 square feet to your structure, then yes, it would kick in. But it wouldn't change, or you wouldn't have to do anything if you're just doing an internal remodel. So your walls don't change, you don't add a floor. If you use the existing footprint to increase the size of a bathroom and you lose a closet, it wouldn't change anything, or it wouldn't kick in a requirement.
A couple more minutes here on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about Ashland's wildfire hazard zone potentially expanding to the whole city. Marguerite Hickman and Chris Chambers from Ashland Fire and Rescue are with us. You can join us at 800-838-3760, 541-552-6782, jx@jeffnet.org, or check us out on the Jefferson Exchange Facebook page. So is it possible, and granted there aren't many vacant lots in the city of Ashland, I know, but... If somebody were to build a house next to you, once the wildfire hazard zone is established, would the requirements for that house potentially be very different to the ones that you have in vegetation, in roof composition, anything else in building materials or spacing of landscaping?
In the building materials side, we're really only talking about the roofing material. That's all that's in that requirement right now in the wildfire hazard zone. And I missed the first part of your question, but if you have an existing house and you're in the wildfire hazard zone and somebody builds next to you, yes, it could be very different than what you currently have, because those requirements haven't been retroactive. However, they have been in effect since 1996, I think, or 92. In the current wildfire hazard zone. So we've seen a lot of change and additions that has impacted. As we move into this area, as Chris mentioned earlier, this may be a 10, 20, 30, 40 year project. Well, it will be, because
that's the rotation time, yeah, for people to get everything changed.
We're not saying, okay, now you got to change everything overnight. So,
all right, let's take another call. We have Dave in Eureka on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Marguerite Hickman and Chris Chambers.
Thank you. Yes, I just had a question. I just barely caught that about the shake roofs. If you currently have shake roof, we've had a couple of different companies talk to us about, you know, shake roofs, like you're saying, we're not good, whatever. But you need to, if they're still good, or do you need to take them off before they need to?
It all depends on where you live. In Eureka, it's probably a very different story from Ashland, for sure. But right. What's the general lifespan on a shake roof? A comp roof can be like 20 years, can't it?
Yeah, I think easily 20 to 30 years. And I think shake, you know, it does, I guess if you take care of it, it can last 20 to 30 years as well. But having taken a couple of shake roofs off of homes, I don't think you want to wait that long, because they do rot.
They really crumble out.
And they really do fall apart. And there is such thing out there as a treated wood shingle with a fire retardant treatment on it. We don't allow those. And the reason being that that needs to be retreated at least every 5 years, if not sooner. And so to incur that cost every 5 years, is the average homeowner really going to do that in order to maintain? And there's no way for us to keep tabs on whether or not they're doing it. And so if we show up during a fire, we just have to assume that it's a shake roof and your house is very susceptible. And, you know, that's we would rather defend a house that's well prepared than one that's got a shake roof and the flammable vegetation.
Let's we've got just a little time left here, and people want to know things like if if there'll be changes in insurance premiums and things like that if they're in a wildfire hazard zone.
So to our knowledge at this point, we've surveyed a few insurance companies, and there's no indication to us that increasing the wildfire hazard zone will cause an increase or a decrease in insurance. It's just a fact, because you still have the same fire protection coverage throughout the city. Insurance companies, we've found, pay more attention to an ISO rating, distance to a hydrant, distance to a station.
Okay, so essentially we're talking about expanding the wildfire hazard zone to the entire city limits of Ashland?
That's correct.
Exactly.
Okay. And if we have time to plug the website, or you can do that later.
No, plug it now.
So on the city's website, ashland.or.us/WHZ for wildfire hazard zone, you can find more information. You can also comment on Open City Hall, which is at the bottom of our website.
And the meeting tonight is at 7 o'clock at the Grove?
Yes, and we encourage anybody to come.
Which is on East Main Street.
Yep.
Near the police department and other city offices. Okay, Marguerite Hickman and Chris Chambers from Ashland Fire and Rescue, thanks for joining us to talk about the wildfire hazard zone.
Thanks,
Thank you so much, Jeffrey.
You bet.